listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. If you have a question or comment about today's show, Jay would love to hear from you at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You can also send an email to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com. That's questions, the number 4, Taylor@gmail.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back to Turning Hard Times into Good Times. I am your host, Jay Taylor, and I'm really happy to have David Stockman with me once again. For good reasons, David is one of the more popular guests on this show, and he is a personal favorite of mine, no doubt, because my free market and libertarian values are, I think, almost entirely in sync with his. Also, given my age, I remember very fondly the days when David was Ronald Reagan's budget director, and he had the intestinal fortitude to stand up for fiscal rectitude when political pressures have almost every budget director since then have caused them to buckle under the pressures from both the Keynes and the supply siders, the quacks that have tragically led our country, I think, down towards destruction, financial destruction and ruin in many ways. So David has always been a hero of mine because of his willingness to stand up for truth, even when that meant differing with his boss, the President of the United States. In a way, I see David as having the same enormous level of intestinal fortitude as Donald Trump, but David is one who relates his strongly held views with civility and grace, and in a way, I suppose, we could all only wish that President Trump was like that as well. But anyway, David, thank you so much for coming on with us again today.
Well, happy to be with you again, Jay, and also for recalling those early days of the Reagan administration, because I just looked at the calendar and I had a recollection that I think is quite relevant and powerful to the moment. And that is, by February 7th in 1981, we had been at the business of putting Ronald Reagan's economic program together for a month and a half. We had had meetings with the president at the White House every day from January 1 forward. We'd gone through 200 or 300 different budget cuts that he had personally listened to and asked questions about and approved, and the whole package was almost ready. It was locked down by the 14th of February, only a few days equivalent from today, and he went to Capitol Hill on February 18th and delivered the whole Reagan economic program, the huge tax cuts, the spending reforms, the targets for the budget for 5 years running, the balanced budget target, and all the rest. Now, a lot of that didn't work out, but I think it's a useful thing to bring up at the moment, because it indicates how far behind the Trump administration is and how they've gotten way off track with this giant misfire in the first week. With the travel ban and the whole firestorm that's created, and now the contest in the court, whether it's a constitutional crisis or not, I'll leave for others to describe. But the point is, I know it's a giant distraction. It's draining political capital very rapidly from the White House when you need it most early in administration to get an economic program moving forward. So I think they're in pretty deep trouble already, and we're just getting started. The clock moves very quickly. The calendar moves very quickly. And just in the last few days, it's become evident that all of these grand plans about hitting the ground running and repealing Obamacare day one and having a tax, big giant tax cut and fiscal stimulus moving through the system early on, none of that's going to happen. I think this year is going to soon be consumed in a debt ceiling crisis, government shutdown threats, or even likelihood that it happens. And we're heading for a totally different scenario than is priced into the market today as a result of this honeymoon period and this wild idea that got you know, implanted in Wall Street that there was going to be some great Trump stimulus, that he was the second coming of Ronald Reagan. I like a lot of things that he said, particularly on foreign policy, although he seems to flop around and be all over the lot. But it is not the same thing, and it's getting off to a very shaky and not very promising start.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that. Well, I would like to have you talk a little bit more about the article that you put out to your paid subscribers today, Stock Markets Unhinged, Why the Crash Will Be Violent. I mean, I know you've been bearish on the equity market for some time. It's continued to defy gravity, I think, because the Fed has a put option, which started way back with Alan Greenspan. But the Fed seems to be, whenever there is a serious decline in the equity markets, they loosen up the reins of credit. How much longer can that go on, David? And that easy credit has been used to a certain extent, to a great extent, I think, by corporations to buy their own stock back, push the stock up, and then exercise their options, all kinds of games being played. But how much longer can the Fed drive the equity market and make sure that all their rich friends stay rich?
Well, that is a great question, and I think the answer in brief is not much longer. I think the Fed is out of dry powder, that when it's happening, this giant constant stimulus, the Greenspan, Bernanke, Yellen put, and all the rest of it, it seems like it can go on forever, that it's a permanent feature of the financial system, but it isn't. The market did crash, you know, about 50% in the spring of 2000. The market did crash again 8 years later. We're now pushing 9 years from the last peak. So I think the Fed now is finished. They're no longer doing QE. Europe is about ready to beginning tapering off or winding down its QE. The Japanese are lost. China's got a huge problem, as some listeners may have noted. In the last day, I think it was announced that their so-called foreign exchange reserves have dropped below $3 trillion for the first time, which means more capital flight, which means that they are tightening their banking system and monetary condition internally. So what I'm saying is all the central banks of the world are coming to the end of the road in terms of all this money printing and all this injection of liquidity in cash into the financial markets. And that means that we're heading into what I would call the payback era. Now, the reason the stock market in the United States had this last, it's a sucker's rally, if you want to use a shorthand term, is because the idea got launched without any real basis, without any real credibility, that the baton of stimulus was going to be handed off from the central bank, from monetary policy to the fiscal policy, to the Trump stimulus of some big Reagan-type tax cut, and infrastructure stimulus of $1 trillion, and more defense spending, and a even bigger deficit than we have today. I think all of that is not going to happen, is completely unreal. And as a result of that, when the market finally figures out that the Fed is done, that the other central banks of the world are running out of dry powder too, and that there is going to be no handoff of the stimulus baton to fiscal policy, then I think there's going to be a panic, because this market is, you know, it's a stimulus junkie. The market no longer discounts real world economics, or the market's trading at 26 times actual GAAP earnings posted for the most recent 12-month period. That's crazy. This late in the cycle, with all the headwinds that we have around the world, and with all the uncertainties, you know, just in the last couple of days, you've seen polls out of Germany saying Merkel could lose, polls out of France saying Le Pen could win. Trump, stumbling around like a whirling dervish within the first month of his administration. When you begin to stack all that up, why in the world do you think would you think that the market should be valued at what I call, you know, skybox levels of PE? Well, it shouldn't be. All of this, as I said in my post today, is very dangerous. And if, you know, people have common sense, they should get out of the way as quickly as they can.
All right. But I'm just trying to understand why QE can't go on. Why can't the lies and the trickery, the deceit, the belief in Santa Claus can't go on? Why can't balance sheets of central banks continue to explode, getting bigger and bigger? What market forces are there that will stop it, David?
Well, there are market forces and there are political forces. In the case of the ECB, the Germans are in total revolt because they believe their banks are getting savaged, their savers are getting savaged, that the money printing at the ECB, although it's actually kept the euro weak and therefore it supported German exports. Nevertheless, politically, Germany is in open revolt, including from their finance minister, about continuation of this giant 80 billion per month QE. So they've already announced their tapering that back to 60 billion, and the next shoe will be it's heading at some point in time towards zero. You don't have to get to zero. You only have to announce that you're heading in that direction, and all of the liquidity that's flowing into the market will change, and the mentality of traders will change. Now, why can't they continue? Well, I think the answer is that this was never meant to be a permanent policy. Even the Keynesian monetary central planners, as I call them, who run the Fed and other central banks, deluded themselves into thinking that this was a one-time, maybe extraordinary kind of policy that would eventually be phased out. And if they went back to it now, it would be an admission that the whole experiment, which is, you know, 8 years old now, has failed. And frankly, I don't think that would be a confidence producer in the stock market. It would actually, in my view, cause a panic because people would realize that QE hasn't worked, doesn't work, and that there is even more problems ahead.
So the reality of economics comes home and intersects with politics, and the political forces then are causing change. Is that sort of the way it's working?
Jay, I think that's it. And part of it is, you know, interest rates have been at zero for something like 96 months running now, and there is a whole segment of American society, retirees and savers, that are getting destroyed by this. That are getting
Absolutely.
Savaged. And they have a political force. Frankly, I think some of the, you know, hidden political force that came out in behalf of Trump and that caused the great shock on election night was in Flyover America, people, savers, people planning for the future and their retirement. Realized they were getting hosed, and they didn't know what the answer is, but they were looking for a change from the status quo. And I think if the Fed went back and said, we're going to keep you savers, we're going to keep our foot on the neck of savers for the next 4 years with even more of this, then you would bring them out of the woodwork. There would be an open political revolt. So you can only defy what I would call the laws of sound economics and sound money for so long. It is not possible to do this indefinitely without just blowing up the whole system.
So do you believe the interest rates, we're seeing an uptick in rates, maybe a counter trend rally right now in the T-bond. Michael Oliver, who was on with us a little while ago, talks about a counter trend rally. He's expected it, but he also believes that when the equity market, when the equity market finally gets its starts downward in a major way, that you could also see some strength in the U.S. Treasuries for a while. But do you believe that the rates are rising then primarily because of market forces, these things you're talking about, and it's not really the Fed that wants the rates to rise and they're pretending they do, or that so that they can pretend that they're still in charge of things, or what?
No, I think these are totally artificial rates worldwide. Now, there's been quite a change since the yields hit a low in August. Remember, the Treasury, 10-year Treasury was at 1.35 at the low point in August. So it's up 100 basis points or more already. But the point is that in August, there were $13 trillion of sovereign debt out of about $45 trillion outstanding in the world. So almost a third. Trading at zero or sub-zero rates. That's crazy. That's, that's in defiance of every notion of, supply and demand and the laws of economics. And so, therefore, the question is, as the central banks take their big fat thumb off the scale and stop buying or taper down dramatically the rate at which they're taking supply out of the market, then the price is going to adjust. This is, all the debt in the world, all the sovereign debt in the world is mispriced. It's the yields are way too low, given the fact that there are taxes in the world, that there is inflation in the world, and that there has to be a return sooner or later if people are actually going to buy this paper. So I don't think it has anything to do with the macros that all these economists talk about all the time, the growth rate or the prospect for an uptick in the growth rate or a little more inflation measured by the CPI. Those things may feed into the mix, but they are only marginal. The big factor is supply and demand for sovereign debt, and the manner in which the scale in the global financial markets has been unbalanced and distorted by QE. Now, people sometimes don't realize how big this has been, mm-hmm. but in 1995, total balance sheets of the major central banks were less than $2 trillion. Today, they're $22
trillion. Wow.
So you just have to think about it. If you buy $20 trillion of something, all right, and it doesn't matter whether it's barrels of oil or tons of copper or billions of bonds, you're going to impact the price in a major way. And
sure.
therefore that's what's going on. And the big dynamic ahead, and I'm not talking about short-term tactical trading. I mean, if there is a major correction in the stock market, yeah, there will be some flow into the bond market and could be a small counter trend rally. But the big future is the era of central bank money printing, in my view, is coming to an end. The global bond market is going to reprice based on the actual supply and demand. The front running of the central banks by bond traders and hedge funds and so forth that have actually exacerbated the mispricing will reverse the other way. Let's just talk about a practical example. Not that long ago, the 10-year debt of Italy was actually trading under 1.0%. Today, I think it's maybe 220 or something like that. Now, why in the world would the bonds of Italy, which is a basket case, its economy is smaller today than it was 10 years ago, its debt to GDP is 135%, its political system is totally paralyzed, they can't even keep a government in office, why would the bonds of a country with those characteristics be trading at 1.0% as they were? The answer is the fast money in Wall Street and London and Europe was front-running the ECB when it was still going full bore, $90 billion a month of bond purchases. And now that it signals that era is over, and it's already announced that it will taper back to 60 billion euros a month, is already impacting the pricing of Italian debt. And that's only a small example of what I mean by a reversal of the front-running dynamic. As the bond markets adjust to the fact that the central bank buying is coming to an end, they'll go the other way. They'll start selling whatever the central bank owns. They have been buying whatever the central banks have announced they intend to buy. You know, so this is the dynamic that we're in.
Wow, it could be really horrible for people that are caught in these instruments, though, David. And you know, I have to ask you, how worried are you about the Joseph Stiglitzes of this world, the Larry Summers, those guys that are pushing for, I don't know if they're still pushing for negative rates? You're suggesting that's not going to happen, but they like this notion of a cashless society. Does that concern you in the least?
Oh yeah, I think that's a very worrisome thing, because that's the last resort of the Keynesian monetary central planners. They realize that savers can only be punished for so long, and that if they really want to drive the world into negative nominal yields, then people are going to go to cash. In fact, people might even start a business warehousing cash at a very efficient fee, rather than as an alternative to bank account deposits, where you're paying the bank to hold your money. So that's why they're going after cash. It is the vital precondition for permanent zero, sub-zero interest rates, which would mean, in a way, the permanent confiscation of the wealth of the savings class of society. So this thing is very dangerous, but I do believe the world's moving in a direction politically where it's going to be very hard for that to happen. I mean, after all, what is the number one item, or one of the items in the platform of Le Pen in France, is to get out of the euro, to get out from under the ECB. Well, I'll tell you one thing, if they went back to the French franc and their own central bank, there wouldn't be any sub-zero yields in France, okay?
Right.
And I think in a even in a U.S. environment, in a Trump era, there's not going to be a Fed with the nerve to drive interest rates to zero, and there is no way that, in my view, you would see a Trump administration signing legislation that would make zero interest rates possible in the United States.
All right, David, with just under 2 minutes left to go, what should people be doing right now? I mean, if you sit around with bonds, you're going to get killed. If you sit around in stocks, you're making the case that stocks are very, very overpriced, and they certainly are from a historical point of view, late in the cycle. So what should people be doing now? Cash could be confiscated. I mean, get your money out of the bank as much as possible. Gold, what do you suggest?
You know, I think right now we're heading to an era where cash is king and gold will be better. In other words, when the central bank money printing regime finally ends or is perceived to have failed, and we're getting close to that now, the ultimate monetary asset is gold, and compared to the size of the financial system in the world, the gold market is quite small, which means that as you get on the margin, more and more people fleeing to the ultimate financial or monetary asset, the price of gold has the potential to soar quite substantially, and I think the risk that it could drop significantly from where it is today is very minimal. So gold is probably the upside asset, and cash will be a good thing to hold, because remember, when the bond market corrects and the stock market corrects, financial asset prices are going to fall dramatically, not just by 5% or 8%, but by 40, 50, or 60%.
Right.
And if people have cash, in 3 years, they're going to buy stuff at a 50% discount. It's a, you know, it's
David,
very comfortable.
We're gonna have to let it go at that, David, because we are out of time. As always, thank you so much for being with us. Your insights are just very, very valuable. We thank you for taking the time to talk to our listeners today, and we hope we can talk to you again sometime in the near future.
Okay, that's great. We certainly will.
Thank you, David. Well, folks, next week, Doug Casey will be my guest, and I'm sure Doug will have a lot that in common with David Stockman. You won't want to miss Doug. Always entertaining. Doug Casey next week. Until then, goodbye and God's blessings to you.
Thank you again for listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with Jay Taylor. Please join us again next Tuesday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
Dynacert is a global leader in carbon emission reduction technologies. Created for use in diesel engines, the hydrogen unit has been proven to reduce carbon emissions by up to 40%, increase torque, improve engine oil quality, and provide up to 19% in fuel savings. Our leading-edge technology is designed for tractor trailers, rail, marine, and newly developed for diesel engine cars. Reducing the amount of greenhouse gases provides benefits to the environment, to communities and businesses, and to our shareholders.
Golden Predator Mining Corp., a well-financed gold exploration company operating in Canada's Yukon. Focused on advancing its Three Aces project, a high-grade gold project located in the southeast Yukon with gold and quartz outcrops at surface. Ongoing work includes trenching, roadwork, drilling, and bulk sampling. Golden Predator also holds the past-producing Brewery Creek project located near Dawson City, Yukon. Golden Predator, a company working closely with Yukon First Nations. Golden Predator trades on the Canadian Venture Market as GPY, and in the U.S. OTC market as NTGSF.
Chilean Metals is a Canadian junior exploration company focusing on high-potential copper, gold prospects in Chile and Canada. Chilean Metals' Zulima property is a Candelaria-like prospect, one of the largest mines in the world. The company has begun its drill program in Chile on its Zulima property and should be completed by the end of February. We also own a 3% royalty on future production on Teck Resources' Copaquiri property, potentially worth millions of dollars annually. This is the time to invest in Chilean Metals, a discovery story with a hedge. Traded TSX Venture under symbol CMX.